Where's 2.5 Geeks is brought to you by Gigabyte's AMD X570 ARS motherboards for third generation AMD Ryzen 3000 processors. Hit the link in the description below for more details. That's right. Hit that dang link. We'll be building a beautiful and beastly AMD Ryzen powered killer gaming machine. We'll have an AMD versus Intel throwdown. It's going to be epic on the icy lake, and will be devilishly red with Radeons and Mighty and Mini all at the same time. Next. Welcome back to yet another episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks webcast. And I hope I didn't confuse you too much with that gibberish, but we've got lots to talk about because it's been a while since we've seen you all. It hasn't been a while since I've seen this guy, though. Marco, how are you doing, my friend? How are you today?
I'm good. I'm in mad scramble mode, although it's time to unwind from work, getting ready for vacation, but it's going to be a mad dash to get everything ready so we can leave for the airport in the morning.
Yes, the proverbial hurry up and relax. That's actually a good thing. Exactly. Not a problem there. Yeah. So we've been traveling and talking with lots of manufacturers lately and reviewing. You've been a reviewing machine, a testing and benchmarking and editorial machine lately. What do you plan to do on your vacation? You've been busting the hump, as they say, lately.
I'm hoping to just sleep in every day, cook nice meals for the kids and wife every day, sit on the beach every day, and hopefully not much else, but we'll see what the wife has planned.
Cook nice meals for the kids and wife. Are you trying to sound like dad husband extraordinaire, or is that like just the usual for you?
I love to cook. If I wasn't a geek, I would love to have been a chef. So I enjoy my time in the kitchen.
I'm with you there, man. I enjoy it too. There's nothing like the end of the day, little music piping on the radio, on the Bluetooth, and little cocktail going, and a couple of saute pans, and yeah, whipping up the nourishment. Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, excellent. Well, you deserve it. You've been totally slammed lately. I've been slammed. It's just been a busy season, and it's a beautiful thing because manufacturers are firing on all cylinders right now, and there's been a lot of we had this season of announcement and unveiling and product launch, but now we're actually starting to get product in to evaluate. So it's not just okay, here's the fanfare and buzz, but here's the product, test it out, tell us what you think. And so we got a lot to cover, and we're going to burn through some big stuff today. Let's talk about a visit we made to New Jersey, building an AMD Ryzen 9 3900X liquid-cooled performance desktop PC with our friends at Main Gear Computer. There it is right there. And that is a Main Gear Vibe case. And as you can see, a Ryzen processor there on the desktop of Windows. But the machine is a very special build that we put together. We wanted to build an all AMD affair with this machine. And you came down and we spent some time with Wallace Santos, the CEO of Main Gear, as well as Ron Reed, the marketing director. And we had a lot of fun that day. What'd you think about this? And what'd you think about the machine, Marco? It's a pretty pretty cool rig, and I'm looking forward to working on it, actually, moving forward.
Yeah, man, I thought it was awesome. I mean, it's exactly the kind of system that somebody getting into the latest Ryzen platform would probably want to build. You know, gorgeous case, really nice custom hardline tubed liquid cooling loop, the top end, at least for now, Ryzen 3000 series chip, a PCIe 4 SSD. I mean, kind of covered all the bases, pretty hardcore build.
Yeah, no, you're looking at the chassis right there now. That's an empty chassis. That's the Vibe, Main Gear Vibe chassis. We should talk a little bit about what the Vibe's all about from a product standpoint, because it sort of will help make sense for folks that are watching. Main Gear, typically, as you may or may not know, is a boutique system builder. They typically do not sell components. That's not their jam. Most of their stuff is meticulously, beautifully built, high performance desktops. That's their core competency, their big success in the market. And they also do some, you know, sort of mainstream production quality stuff as well, you know, lower cost systems and even things like notebooks and gaming chairs. But they're known for their unbelievably well-engineered performance gaming desktops. But the Vibe is a new class of product, which is you can buy as a pre-built from Main Gear. Or, as you can see here, our buddy Aaron, Brent from Main Gear, Brent, is assembling an EVGA power supply into the Vibe. You can actually buy a Main Gear Vibe case and Apex liquid cooling solution. So you can buy the kit, the cooling kit, the Apex liquid cooling kit, and the case separately and build your own, do a DIY with Main Gear peripherals and a chassis. And so, yeah, we actually went down there, built a Ryzen 9 3900X 12 core beast, all liquid cooled with Main Gear Apex liquid cooling, which was just fantastic. It's currently in the studio behind me now, and it will eventually probably take its place as my workstation rig moving forward. 32 gigs of RAM, Radeon RX 5700 XT, absolutely decked out with the Apex cooling block and dual radiators, 300 millimeter radiator, 240 millimeter radiator up the top. I mean, just an absolute beast of a machine, and it came out gorgeous. RGB lighting all around, controlled via the Gigabyte motherboard. We used the Gigabyte Aorus X570 Master motherboard. That was the components, or one of the components we used. They have PCI Express 4 SSD from Aorus and Gigabyte, and I mean, man, I'm looking forward to performance with this thing. How do you think it's going to hold up to what I'm used to? And I'll be very honest, I've been an all Intel platform guy for a long time now. I think I've got maybe an 8-core in my rig right now. It's been a while since I've ripped open the CPU socket. GPUs have been in and out of there. But what do you think, how do you think this machine's gonna perform for me? Am I gonna be satisfied with my multi-core goodness, my AMD goodness?
I think so. I think, you know, you had a high-end CPU in there already. So I think, when you're doing some heavy lifting, I think you're going to see some nice improvement, but it's the day-to-day quick stuff, you know, that fast SSD, you got that new SSD in there that's going to be nice and snappy, you have the faster memory, you have all that cache, so it's just going to be a really responsive system. I think that the day-to-day stuff, you're going to be like, oh, that's quick, that's nice, that's fast. And then the real heavy lifting, you'll see a little bit of a boost because you already had a fast CPU in there before, but you know, you were maybe a generation or two back, so a little bit older architecture. So I think, yeah, you're going to be pleasantly surprised. And that nice low power and super cool, you know, that CPU is barely going to break a sweat with all that cooling in that system. So I think you'll be good.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what the chip I actually have in there now. I should look at my system now, but it's I think it's a 10-core chip, actually, an Intel 10-core chip. But this is a 12-core that when we overclocked it with, and nothing exotic, it's got liquid cooling, which is actually a rather exotic liquid cooling setup. But not tweaking the voltages. There it is right there. That's the Apex liquid cooling block. We're now filling the block, the distribution block, Brent is, with white, you know, liquid cooling solution. That's actually a antimicrobial, anti-conductive solution, and mostly water. And that actually is, both those radiators are cooling the CPU. We don't have the GPU in the loop right now. We're going to probably put that in down the road. But that thing, when we hit max precision boost overdrive for 4.15 gigahertz across all cores, roughly, doesn't throttle a tick, and actually outpaced a 16-core Threadripper 2950X at stock. So talk about a snappy, you know, third-gen Ryzen build. Just beautiful. You can see right there. Look at that Apex, baby. That is a cool thing. So what you're seeing there on the Apex block, down the bottom is a pump. And then there's actually, is there a flow? Yeah, there's a flow meter there too. So you can actually, you know, see the flow, the pump's there. That it's going to get topped off a little bit more right there. But you can see the feed to the CPU and from the CPU back into the block and the radiator. And just meticulously built. Really cool stuff. You jonesing for one, Marco? You've got all this kind of gear at home. You really can't complain. You in your lab, you could build something like this, or better, maybe.
I could. So what I'm going to build, I've literally been meaning to do it for like a year. I'm still on Ivy Bridge. It's, my machine is on its last legs. It creaks and squeaks like there's coils dying. It sounds like a cricket sometimes. I'm going to do something that's going to probably annoy people. I think I'm going to title the build video, you know, the Threadripper build you'll love to hate, because I'm going to do a high-end Threadripper workstation processor with a workstation GPU, but in like a low-key case, because I need an optical bay, but with RGB inside. So it's going to be like a mishmash of crap, and people are going to be like, what the hell did you pick that for? But I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway, and I just have to find the time to do it. Maybe right after vacation, I'll pull that off.
Yeah, yeah. You got to get a break, like just a break in the action for a little bit. And I'm kind of the same way. It's like it's been rapid fire one after another. Today showed up the Samsung Galaxy Note 10. If I get the screen to light up for you. Anyways, yeah, there's the Note 10. It'll blow out the screen. It's a beautiful machine. That's next on my agenda. The Samsung Galaxy Note 10. Glare machine. There you go. And then, you know, notebooks over here. I've got the new ThinkPad X1 Carbon. I've got a Dell XPS 15 7950, the latest rev of that. I mean, it is just coming fast and furious. So hopefully when you get back from your vacay, Marco, you won't be too buried. You can dig into that build for a day or two, and then get back to work, damn it. Or slave drivers.
Yeah, I'm definitely buried. I have some of the lower end Ryzen 3000 series chips on the way, so nice. I want to jump on those. I have some GPUs from Gigabyte that I want to bang on. I have some, you know, low end SSDs, which everybody seems to love because they're getting so good. But what are you going to do? There's only so many hours in the day. If my rig dies, I'm really screwed. So probably would be more productive if I had the new rig in place. So we'll probably make some time.
Got to have the right tools. Absolutely. I will not falter for that for one second. Cool. Well, let's move on and talk about something that was interesting to us when you reviewed the Ryzen 9 and new Ryzen 7, a third generation series Ryzen processors, 3000 series processors from AMD. We thought to ourselves, you know, okay, bang for your buck is fantastic. You know, really love the performance, certainly core for core versus Intel. But when you look at the architecture, how did AMD, how did they perform here relative to straight up per clock tick improvements in the architecture? Are we just talking about, some of the clock speed enhancements and other tweaks, a little bit more cache, what have you, that are causing this performance lift? Or is this really an architectural leap forward for AMD with, you know, versus their previous gen Zen architecture, Zen Plus architecture? So we did a piece. We had a good buddy of ours that came over from the Tech Report, actually. Ben Funk took a bunch of data that we had pulled together, and we analyzed it with him. And he did this piece, AMD Ryzen 9 3900X versus Intel Core i9 9900K IPC instructions per clock shootout. Did AMD close the gap? ? That is a lot of verbiage for a headline, but we had to say it. And it turns out that there's been some marked improvements here. Marco, why don't you dive into what your thoughts are on that, and we'll chew on that a little bit for the audience. Guys, fire away in the chat if you have questions.
Yeah, so AMD definitely pulled off a major upgrade with Zen 2. In the lead up to the launch, there were some questions about that separate I/O die and having the memory controller essentially off on a separate chip, and seeing how that was going to affect latency and overall performance, and if there was going to be any weird sort of corner cases. And it turns out that monstrous amount of cache on the chip, plus whatever magic AMD worked with the Infinity Fabric, there basically were no weird anomalies with memory or latency or anything funky. The latency is a little higher because the memory is not directly attached to the CPU cores like the first gen, but it's really minimal. And in aggregate, because there's fewer calls out to memory because of that huge cache, Zen 2 performs really well. Then, of course, there are the architectural improvements. and the clock speed benefits over the first gen and Zen Plus. And what you end up with, if you look at our article comparing the IPC, Intel technically wins more than it loses, but it's really a neck and neck tie. And this is with the latest Coffee Lake. So Intel's, the current latest architecture you can buy today for the desktop versus AMD's current gen architecture. And it's basically neck and neck. You're going to see AMD win some, you're going to see AMD lose some, but nobody's blowing the other out of the water. They're neck and neck. It's nip and tuck throughout. But what you will see is AMD's got better multi-core scaling. So what that means is for those single-threaded workloads and tooling around on the desktop, Zen 2 is awesome. It's right there with Intel's best. But if you're doing some heavy lifting and you need that multi-core, you know, performance, it might be better than Intel. It could be the better choice. Plus, it's lower power, and you know, you have that architectural compatibility from socket to socket. You can have a motherboard from 2 years ago that still works with these processors, you know, using AM4. So AMD really did a lot right. At this point, probably have to call it a tie. AMD is definitely winning the marketing war, probably the mindshare war right now, but can never count Intel out.
Yeah, you will not count Intel out. The Chipzilla is no question a force, especially when it comes to silicon manufacturing, and that's what we're expecting to come back online with 10th generation stuff. We'll be talking about Ice Lake in a little bit for mobile, but on the desktop, you're right. AMD's really got something special these days, and looking at it, if folks are reading this article, they may scratch their head a little bit, but we need to probably explain the methodology behind it. We took a 3900X, a 12-core AMD CPU, dropped out two cores, so dropped a CCX and dropped it down to a 10-core, matched it up versus the Core i9-9900K. I'm sorry, dropped out four cores, Marco, right? Yep. Made it an 8-core versus a Core i9-9900K, which is also an octal core CPU. And then we matched the clock speed. So now you have 8-core. Oh, and yeah, right. And the system memory speed, sure. 3200 megahertz, 3.2 gigahertz system memory, DDR4. But so now you have 8-core versus 8-core at 4 gigahertz, I think it was, in round numbers, timed right up. So, you know, strapped to exact same specs. So you can look at the architecture, see what the benchmarks produce, and just look at the architecture versus architecture performance. And it's an interesting take. Some things, you know, some tests go squarely to AMD and some tests go squarely to Intel. It's an interesting look. And then, you know, of course, if you enabled, and you know, performance per dollar is a whole nother question, because if you re-enabled those four cores on the 3900X versus an 8-core 9900K, in a lot of tests, it's going to smoke the 9900K, and it's roughly the same price. So, you know, it's an interesting look at the architecture and what AMD has been able to achieve with it. And good stuff. We thought folks would want to just see, you know, what the architecture, you know, bare metal sort of look can do versus Intel's best currently on the market on the desktop. And man, even looking at it that way, AMD's got something special. You talked about cache, and I think you hit the nail on the head with that. You can hide a lot of things latency-wise with cache, with big fat on-chip cache, so you don't have to go off chip to system memory. And that's, I think, the hook here. And what's a 3900X have for cache? It's like 36 megs. Something like that.
Of just L3, yeah.
Just L3, yeah. It's freaking crazy. So that's a huge compliment. And the other thing, compliment of cache. And the other thing that's interesting is that I think AMD's chiplet architecture here really paid off relative to being, to have the availability to put that much cache on the chip itself. Because, you know, 7-nanometer chiplet, you have really tiny cores, die cores. Cache, you know, L3 cache, you know, RAM in silicon is a very expensive, large chunk of silicon. And so the fact that they could modularize and miniaturize at 7-nanometer in the case of the CPU cores, their architecture, and really optimize that from a silicon real estate standpoint meant that they could bring that big fat cache on because they had the room for it, both, you know, packaging wise and thermally and, you know, power budget wise. So Yeah, impressive stuff. And you know, it's fascinating to see the CPU architecture, how it's held up so well, and sort of the, you know, what it has for available legs moving forward just from their design approach. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think the real the unsung hero here, one of the little tidbits of information that came out after, I think it was Robert Halleck that tweeted it in a conversation, was the latency from core to core within a chiplet and the latency from core to core from chiplet to chiplet. So going over the Infinity Fabric off chip, Infinity Fabric back onto another chip, the only difference in latency is the wire latency. So that basically is speed of light. So like for them to pull that off, where that chiplet basically behaves like it's monolithic with just a slight difference in latency, that's the key, and that's awesome. That's why everything kind of worked out so well here, because having that chiplet connected with Infinity Fabric and, you know, chiplet to I/O die, it just works. And AMD pulled off something special there.
Cool. Well, how will that play out? What's going to be interesting is to see how that will play out in the data center, because obviously in the desktop, you know, consumers are seeing the benefit here. In the data center, where you know, cores per socket and, you know, multi-threaded throughput per square millimeter of server rack is super critical. You would think that the Zen 2 architecture will play off really well for AMD in the data center, but the data center design and, you know, gestation period from architecture to architecture is much longer. Google came out and announced they were adopting it. I think Amazon AWS is adopting EPYC, but it's going to take a longer time, I should say, for AMD to, you know, to see traction in unit sales in EPYC. But it's being adopted. You know, we're seeing the benefits, or they're seeing the benefits of design wins now. So we had a piece up. Actually, you took a trip out to see the folks at AMD. AMD EPYC 7002 series Zen 2 architecture doubles data center performance and density. What do you mean doubles, Marco?
These things are crazy. Using the same Zen 2 architecture and the same chiplet, you know, design and packaging to make big monstrous up to 64 core 128 thread chips. So like the top end EPYC 7742 is a 64 core 128 thread processor, a single processor with basically all of the benefits of Zen 2, with I almost swore, with a boatload of PCI Express 4 connectivity. So 128 lanes of PCI Express 4 coming off. Can be set up in a dual socket. So you're talking and here's the other kicker too. Power for that chip, the max is 240 watts. So in a 2P server, you can have 128 cores, 256 threads. I believe, if my memory serves correctly, up to 4 terabytes of memory per CPU, with faster memory, with PCIe 4, with a ton of PCIe additional connectivity, for a fraction of the price of Intel, right? So if you look at the new lineup in that architecture piece, what you'll see is, as of today, right, if you were to buy Intel's top-end 28-core Xeon, the one that you can get off the shelf, you don't need, like, they have, Intel has 56-core Xeons, but you have to buy, like, their platform with the liquid cooling. The socketable ones are coming later. So if you were to buy the top-end 28-core Xeon scalable Platinum processor, you'd have to buy two to get 56 cores in a 2P chassis, right? And I believe that chip is still like $12,000 a pop. So 24 Gs, right, for 56 cores with slower memory with no PCIe 4. Whereas in this new Zen 2 lineup, AMD has a single, so all of them can be single socket, right? So there's a misconception you have to buy two of the dual socket. You can just use one, but they also have lower price single socket that you can't do 2P. And the 77, I believe it's the 7702, right? I think that chip is only like $4,600 only. But for that $4,600, you can basically build a 1P server for a fraction of the price of what Intel offers that has more performance and features. That's sick right now. Like, that's crazy. Like, data center people
that's
be like,
third. Oh, that's a third of the price.
of just one CPU. You'd have to buy two of those Xeons.
Oh my God. So
like,
yeah,
like
mind blowing.
The aggressiveness by AMD for this Epic launch is crazy. Now the first gen Epic was a strong part, but the market, you know, there was some trepidation there. AMD hadn't been playing in the data center for years. I think now with these, AMD is going to sell every single one they make, I think.
Yeah, I think it's going to take a while. I think you're right. I think it takes a lot for the data center and for the cloud. There's a heck of a lot of validation that goes on to, you know, make sure apps are compatible, that stability under heavy duty load is there. I mean, a platform validation in a data center isn't like, it's not the same as a desktop validation for a consumer level product. It's similar to the kind of validation jump you make going from a standard desktop consumer product to a workstation product and a workstation pro CPU or GPU, for example, and even perhaps more so depending on the application. If you're talking mission critical, you know, finance applications or data analytics that cannot fail, it takes a lot of validation and, you know, burn in, you know, months and months. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's extremely attractive. And I think what we're hearing now is that these big companies, these cloud, you know, based companies, whether it be Google, Amazon, AWS, I'm not sure if Microsoft stepped out with Azure, but they are in the process of kicking the tires and lighting the fires, as they say on Epic. And actually, here's another number from the Architecture Marco that I just pulled out. And we were talking about cash before on the Ryzen 3000 series family. 256 megs of L3 cache and a 64 core chip. Oh my God. It is just fat. It's fat all around.
And you know, you can have the other, so not only can you have a ton of memory attached, if you remember back to the first gen ones, right? You had kind of corner case weird memory issues because of all those additional, NUMA zones, because you had memory attached to each core and communications across cores could sometimes cause weird latency. Now with the I/O die, all the memory is attached there. So it's one hop from chiplet to I/O die, and you eliminate some of those NUMA zones there. So there's just a lot of benefits to this platform versus the first one. And I think the market's ready to embrace AMD. Now, you know, we're doing a lot of positive talking on AMD, but Intel does some really good stuff, and you can bet they're going to counter this. We're going to talk about Ice Lake later. And that's sort of portends some interesting stuff that's coming. Before we go on though, I have a question from the chat.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm probably going to pronounce your name wrong. I apologize. I think it's a Rupanjan. You're asking if he should buy a 9700K or a 3700X for a high refresh 1080p gaming. Now, if only 1080p gaming, if that is literally your only concern, technically you'll probably get better performance with the Intel processor across a wider range of games. You will have cases where the AMD chip is faster or the Intel chip is faster if you tested a bunch of games. But that said, I'd still personally buy the Ryzen because I doubt that's the only thing you're going to do on the system. You get the additional cores, you'll get this the hyper-threading or the symmetrical multiprocessing with the Ryzen. The platform, you can get some really nice bleeding edge motherboards because, you know, the motherboard ecosystem just really embraced Ryzen 3000 series. I personally would buy the Ryzen, but for a high refresh 1080p gaming, you really can't go wrong with either one of those.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I was going to say that as well. I think when you talk about high refresh rate gaming, you know, most games are not that heavily threaded. You know, maybe 3-4 threads, you know, tops. You're running thread for the AI, you're running you know, thread for the rendering pipeline, you know, a few different things, but not that heavily threaded. And really what you're talking about is clock ticks and IPC and cache actually too. So it's an interesting evaluation, but I think you're right, and hit the nail on the head there. Lots of comments coming in. After you take into consideration, Peter H makes an interesting point. After you take into consideration all the many security patches Intel has, they're toast. I wouldn't say they're quite toast, but yes, you've got some security patches there, some updates that'll limit performance a little bit, that'll cap performance a little bit on the Intel. But yeah, I think you've got the data. We should probably drop your review link, Marco, for Ryzen 3000 series into the chat. I'll do that shortly here because we have evaluated the 3700X versus this 9700K.
We didn't look at a 3700X yet. 3900X we looked at.
Oh, 3900. No, well, 3700. Yeah, we got a Ryzen 7 3700X. It's in.
Did I have it in there? Oh, maybe I did. Remember.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. It's absolutely in there. It's in the headline too, baby. So yeah, you can take a look at how that performs and let me see, let's just pull up something interesting here. Gaming. I'm going to pull up the numbers and we'll stay on this for just a second. Yeah. If you look at the 9700K isn't in there. We have a 9600K and the 9900K above and below it. We have a 9980XE in there as well. But take a look at the graphs. I'll drop a couple in here. Here's our gaming benchmarks. I'll drop this into the chat as well. Take a look at the graphs. Gives you a sense. Ryzen 7 3700X is right there. It's right there for gaming. It's not far behind. So, yeah, cool stuff. All right, well, let's move on to what hopefully as Intel gets this thing into reality more, we'll bring the fight back again and really turn up the heat in terms of the competition versus AMD. Intel's 10-nanometer Ice Lake benchmarks, 10th gen Core i7 performance explored. So this is 10th generation notebook processor performance, 10-nanometer Ice Lake. And you were traveling, man, here again, Marco, visiting the folks at Intel. You've been doing a lot of work lately, dude. Holy crap. And you saw performance firsthand. You were able to run some numbers on it. These are not production-ready systems, but early prototypes. I think you were on a white book of some sort. What were your impressions of Intel 10th generation processor technology?
Yeah, impressions are great. We got to look at a software development platform. So the system that we, you know, we're one of a very few publications that got early access to actual Ice Lake hardware. And we got to test it in both its 15-watt and 25-watt incarnations. Now, in terms of comparison systems, you know, it's not like we have every notebook laying around. So we bought the best Ryzen 7 3700U we could find at the time. It was a Lenovo machine. Also had an HP Core i7 8565U on hand here for comparison. And what you see is that even in its 15-watt mode, the Core i7 1065G7, in terms of CPU performance, is very strong. In some cases, it's the fastest available. It doesn't quite boost as high as the others, so it doesn't win across the board. But clearly, massive IPC improvements for Intel on the CPU side. But the integrated GPU is freaking awesome. So it's like 2x the performance, sometimes more, versus AMD's previous gen. Now, we couldn't test power and battery. These were not production-ready systems. But assuming power and battery are good, because these are 10-nanometer next-gen stuff, lots of power-saving features built in, you're looking at an Intel, the fastest CPU core from Intel, with their best graphics yet, potentially. You know, if you look at Project Athena's goals to have that all-day battery life and better experience, potentially with the best battery life, speculating here out of a notebook, Intel's going to come on really strong in the notebook space. And then that IPC benefit that Ice Lake offers, when that eventually migrates to desktops, Intel will take that IPC crown away from Zen 2, assuming it happens before Zen 2 Plus comes. Intel's having problems with 10 nanometers. There's no way around it. There's no mincing words. They have a lot of work cut out for them. But assuming clocks are there and Ice Lake makes it to the desktop in similar core counts to AMD, theoretically, Intel should win across the board if they pull that off. Right. Because if you have roughly an 18% IPC improvement, which is really big, you know, on average is 18%. So Ice Lake is looking strong, but man, we got to be able to buy them. You know, Intel's got to get them out the door. So this was just an early look. We really can't dwell on it until we test retail stuff. But Ice Lake's looking strong. You know, fastest PC Mark scores, really strong encoding scores. Gaming was surprisingly good on the GPU. So there's lots of good news here. It's just, you just can't buy it yet.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. It's out there. It's in the wings. As a matter of fact, I was with Dell earlier this summer, and they had the new XPS 13 2-in-1 there. Beautiful machine, by the way. I am looking forward to that. It is gorgeous. You're going to Jones big time over that laptop. It's right up your alley. It's perfect for your size that you like. I like more of a 14-inch format, but it's pretty cool. Anyways, I should take that back. I think it's more of a 14-inch display. I have to go back and look at those numbers, but they had 10th gen Ice Lake in the machine. They weren't allowing any numbers to be run on it, but they're out there. The manufacturers are building production level systems with the silicon now, and it's just a question of getting the system wrung out, getting it validated, you know, doing all that diligence of a full run production, a volume production product that they're going through. It's coming soon. It'll be available for the Q4 shopping season for sure. I think it's, you know, kind of any week now kind of thing that we're going to start seeing these things in the wild. But if you look at like the Cinebench performance, we're talking about a 6-core chip now too, which is great, in a 15 watt TDP for, you know, your average 3 to 4 pound, you know, 2.5 to 4 pound ultralight, right? So
it was a quad core, these ice.
Oh, you had a quad? Okay. Yeah. Sorry. What's the 25? There was a 6-core in here too. What's the 25 watt? Oh, there was a 25 watt version. That's
just the TDP cranked up to 25 watts. So it can turbo longer. That's all.
Okay. I'm looking on the first page. I'm not losing my mind, but I thought it was, but you're right. I guess I am losing my mind. It's 4-core. Anyways, 4-core, 8-thread. And the performance, looking at Cinebench, is impressive. It's way out ahead of the previous gen, by a significant amount. And then, yeah, you can TDP up to 25 watts and it really blows. So, you know, blows the door. So good stuff. Looking forward to it. Intel's just got to bring it. What do you think? What do you think how this architecture is going to play in the desktop? It's great to see, by the way, essentially a doubling in graphics throughput too, right?
Yeah, I mean, it should kick butt. It really should be strong, assuming 10 nanometer can clock fairly high. You know, that's going to be the big question on the desktop. I mean, I'm confident Intel can build a big many core chip using, you know, the Sunny Cove architecture, the one that's, you know, the foundation of Ice Lake. It's, can they get 10 nanometer to make enough of them and clock high enough to compete across the board? And I mean, that's probably the battle Intel is fighting internally right now. But, you know, when AMD was kicking Intel's butt in years past with the first Athlons, It took a couple of generations, but then, you know, Intel stepped on the gas pedal and launched Conroe, and AMD was kind of relegated to the bargain bin for like a decade. I don't know if they can do that again, but Intel will do something. And they're not going to just say, we'll just concede the processor fight. We don't need to. No, they're going to step on the gas pedal and something big is going to happen. We just don't know what it is yet.
Yeah, when it comes to x86 architecture, Intel's got a ton of resources to bear. They have a huge software team as well for optimizing this stuff. Really looking forward to Gen 11 graphics in notebooks as well, because I think the experience there is going to get, you know, playable across, you know, popular, you know, titles at reasonably good frame, you know, 1080p frame rates. And, you know, from what I've seen of it, it's an impressive leap in performance. Rupanjan says, what did he say? Any news for Intel's next gen desktop CPUs? We don't have any formal news yet that we can share or timing, but you can be sure that Intel is working hard to get 10th gen architecture out in the desktop as well, because AMD is beginning to nip at market share, certainly with Ryzen 3000, no question about it. But we shall see. We shall see. It'll be interesting to watch how Intel reacts to this. I think when it comes to manufacturing, that is their core competency. They are a manufacturing juggernaut. And so this 10 nanometer hiccup, I think, is temporary, and they will catch a groove back pretty quick once they get it wrung out. And the other thing to note that folks might not understand is that just because 7 nanometer sounds tighter, smaller, you know, lower die geometry than a 10 nanometer architecture, it's not apples and apples. You can't look at 7 nanometer TSMC and say it's better than 10 nanometer Intel manufacturing process. Intel's 10th gen or 10 nanometer process is pretty impressive. It's pretty efficient. We'll have to see how it shakes out when they get these things coming up here in Q4, you know, into the wild. Let's move on to the GPU side of the house now. PowerColor RX 5700 XT Red Devil Review Custom Navi arrives. And this is something that we were hoping for. I think some folks anyways were hoping for, you know, super top end, you know, performance, competitive performance versus NVIDIA from Navi. AMD stepped out with a mid-range offering, lower cost offering, and but the reference cards that were offered were a whole different ball of wax than what virtually every other third party board partner is now releasing to the wild. And you took a look at the PowerColor RX 5700 XT Red Devil. Is it worth considering a reference card at this point, or are these third party boards so much better than the original AMD design? What are your thoughts there, Marco?
I think the only thing that would make me grab a reference card over one of the third party boards is if you absolutely couldn't sacrifice a slot, say for a certain type of chassis or whatever, because the reference card is only two slots and just about all of the third party boards are 2.5 slots, so really 3 slots. But in terms of features and everything else, I can't speak to all of them. I only tested the PowerColor so far. The PowerColor card's basically better than the reference board in every single way measurable. The Red Devil cards have been really popular for a few generations because PowerColor kind of goes all out. They're a touch more expensive than some of the others, but you can easily justify that because, you know, this particular card, base clock is the same as the reference card, but the game clock, which is where you'll see most games usually hit in terms of frequency, you know, is hundreds of megahertz higher than AMD's reference card. And the max boost clock is over 2 gigahertz, officially over 2 gigahertz, 2010 megahertz. And you get that big giant 2.5 slot wide cooler with 3 90 millimeter fans. You get RGB lighting. You have lighted ports. So you can actually see the ports underneath your desk in the dark. It's way quieter than the reference card. So there's two BIOS modes on this card. So there's an OC BIOS, which sets the card for 220 watts, and then a silent BIOS, which sets it for a power target of 180 watts. Now, I test in a chassis, right? So I test it as you're going to be using a card that you buy. It's in a mid tower. I have the side panel off just to make it easy to swap cards, but it's tested as a gamer would use it. It's not an open air with, you know, instrumentation right up against it. I test it in a chassis. In a chassis with a single case fan, with a PSU fan, with just a basic tower type cooler in my test rig, you can't hear the difference between the OC mode and the silent mode in real world gaming and benchmarking. The card is quiet, right? Yes, you can hear it spin up, but definitely not loud. Now, I had my sound meter about a foot away, and I measured both just to get an actual measurement, and it varied 0.2 dBA. So it was like 44.5 to 44.7 in the two modes. I couldn't hear the difference, though. The meter picked up a slight difference, but we're talking negligible. So, yeah, much quieter, much cooler, too. Now, the junction temperature, some guys are freaking out over the junction temperature on these cards. They're saying, oh, my God, it's hitting 110 degrees. Now, AMD actually just put up a blog post explaining that 110-degree junction temp is within spec. It's also, the reading is different than previous gen cards. That reading is basically the hottest part of the GPU. On a previous gen card, maybe you saw a temperature, let's say you saw a temp of 99, right? Or 90, and you think, oh my God, it's 20 degrees lower than 110. But if the sensor was, you know, even if it's a fraction of a centimeter away from the hottest part, that can account for those huge deltas. So I'm not justifying the blower cooler and saying 110 is great. I'm just saying don't let that 110 junction temp kind of freak you out on Navi. That said, temps on this card were awesome, and it overclocked really easily. The only real negative that I could say with the card is, right, is it's more expensive than the reference card. So I got the limited edition bundle was $449. There's a $439 version, which is exactly the same sans a mouse pad. But I really like this card. Now, if you're sure that you don't want ray tracing, you can basically, so an RTX 2070 Super is a touch faster, but it's like $50 to $70 more, maybe a little more depending on the model. If you want to save that money, maybe put it towards memory or a big SSD, this is a kick-ass card for $450. Fantastic card. Like I would have no problem recommending it for a 1440p gamer that wants a leading edge GPU. It's just a really nice card.
Nice. Wow. What do you think? What are your thoughts about the thermal? And a lot of folks knocked AMD with respect to the reference blower type cooler, which exhausts warm air out of your chassis. You got a tri-axial fan set up here. What are your thoughts relative to how that GPU under load for a continuous, you know, let's say gaming, not just a benchmark run or two, but an hour or two of heavy duty gaming at 1440p, let's say, you know, all maxed out. What's that going to do from a thermal saturation standpoint inside of a chassis that, I don't know, may or may not have the best ventilation? It concerns there. You got to make sure you get your chassis well piped and ventilated.
Technically, yes. I think anybody considering a card like this is going to have decent cooling in their chassis. As long as the air is moving, I don't think the blower argument versus the actual argument is a real argument. Maybe temperatures change slightly within the case, but if you have proper ventilation, it's a non-issue in my opinion. I would take the quieter, higher performing cooler over the reference the blower cooler.
Yeah, yeah, I can. In the new rig, the main gear rig, I can definitely hear the reference card spin up, and you know, all the more reason to maybe get that GPU into the liquid cooling loop on that one. So interesting when you launched your reference card article, the AMD RX 5700 series an original launch article. And of course, you know, the price move came since then and made things more attractive. But you were a little bit cooler, shall we say, on Navi than perhaps you are now after seeing these third-party partner cards. Is it more impressive to see what the ecosystem is doing with Navi now? And does it give you more hope, I guess, of Navi in the future and its potential to compete with NVIDIA?
Yes. It's just a nicer product all around, right? It basically addresses all of the concerns people had with the reference cards for a marginally higher price. Mm-hmm. Now, again, you're not getting any sort of ray tracing, but if you don't care, it's
right.
You know, a card in the same class as a $500 2070 Super, it's faster than the 2060 Super more often than not. And it trails the 2070 Super more often than not, but at a lower price. So, I really like it. I personally would have no problem with this card in my personal rig. I would absolutely run it in my rig.
Gotcha. Yeah, you know, and that's the $64,000 question too. Is RT support, ray tracing support, Microsoft DXR? Is that going to be important to you as a gamer moving forward for the next however many years? What's your upgrade cycle typically is the question. So if you're going to have this card for, I don't know, let's say 3 years, maybe you don't upgrade that often. The ray tracing is coming. It's not if, but when. We're seeing more and more titles and, you know, more and more announcements, major game engines, Unity, Unreal, all the ones that basically drive the AAA title ecosystem, supporting ray tracing. So it's not a matter of if, but when. So what do you think about that question of, okay, is it worth investing another $50 to $70 in this case in an RT capable car, or is that a too tough of a question for you to answer, Marco?
So I'm gonna flip it a slightly different way. There's a potential that in 3 years there's games that will require ray tracing. That means they won't even run on other cars,
right?
If that happens, yep. In that situation, you're gonna be pissed if you don't have ray tracing, you know. But I think I think you know, as somebody that would probably upgrade every year or two, year and a half, you know, find a reason to sell the old one, invest another $50 and upgrade, it's probably not going to be an issue for most people. I do think NVIDIA caught the entire market off guard launching these ray tracing ready cards as fast as they did, and everybody's got to play catch up. Ray tracing is the future. Whether it's this iteration of ray tracing we have remains to be seen. I don't know.
Yeah.
But today at this price point, I can wholeheartedly recommend them. I don't know if I could say that in 2 or 3 years.
Right.
You know, if this was 2022, and AMD was still saying, you know, ray tracing's not ready, and they launched a card with no ray tracing support, I probably would have a very different opinion.
Yeah. It's not, though. So interesting question in the chat, and then we'll move on because we got to close and wrap here. But yeah. AMD Fidelity FX better than NVIDIA DLSS. So image sharpening, Radeon image sharpening, what's your opinion of that versus DLSS? And they are sort of apples and oranges, but in another way, certainly address image quality directly, both of them. What do you think there, Marco, before we move on?
So yeah, actually I have a couple of questions of his I need to answer. So the Fidelity FX versus DLSS argument, not exactly an apples to apples comparison. If you're strictly just talking about the upscaling and quality of the upscaling, RIS and Fidelity FX is probably better. That the contrast aware filter and the GPU upscaling working in combination seems to be better on AMD. But the way DLSS works, and you kind of get the performance of that lower resolution and the upscaling, you know, with ray tracing, it's not exactly the same type of comparison. So yeah. It's not something I can just say yes or no, one thing. If you're strictly talking scaling quality and looking at pixels, AMD's probably got the better pixels in that regard. Now, right. Same guy also asked about, should he buy a 2080 Super or wait for higher end Navi? Really tough question, right?
Yeah.
I'm of the opinion, if you have the money, always buy the fastest GPU you can afford, right? If you have the funds, you're never going to be pissed you bought the fastest GPU for your budget. So I'd say go ahead and get the 2080 Super. That said, my gut, this is not confirmed anywhere, right? My feeling with this first-gen Navi launch was they performed a lot better than AMD anticipated. This was supposed to be the mainstream Navi, like those mainstream Polaris chips. And it's really, in terms of die area, a small chip versus NVIDIA stuff right now. Theoretically, AMD could increase the size of that die. Let's say they just went 50% bigger, you know, added some, you know, wider memory interface and just, you know, more pipes throughout the GPU. Yep. It would probably easily beat a 2080 if we take ray tracing out of the equation. So if we don't have a date, if that next gen, you know, the higher end Navis are coming soon, I'm really excited for them. Don't know when they're coming. So if you have the budget for 2080 Super, get it. Enjoy your games right now and have some fun, because you know, you can wait forever. That kind of question can be asked at any time. Now, you also, I'm just going to jump to CPUs for a second. You mentioned 9700K versus the 3700X for 1080p 60fps gaming while streaming. Now, the 9700K doesn't have hyperthreading, so it's 8 cores, 8 threads. If you're if you care about streaming and gaming, you definitely want the Ryzen because you get all those extra threads. You know, so for doing multitasking, you want those extra threads. Go Ryzen, no question.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there was another question, I think, in here, or we're good. And I think we got everything.
Yeah, we got just a couple minutes to talk about Toshiba's BG4 SSD. We just put that up this week as well. Mighty but mini NVMe storage, and then we'll finish up here. boy, that is a single chip NVMe SSD capable of pushing out something like 2.25 gigs per second of sequential read at 1 terabyte capacity. Holy crap. Look at that thing. It's minuscule.
Yeah. So here, I'll make you laugh. So I'll only talk about it for a minute because these are not SSDs you can just go to a store and buy. These are what's going to appear in like next gen thin and light notebooks. But here's what a typical 2280 M.2 SSD looks like.
And with a heat sink. Yeah.
And here's the BG4. So yeah, like basically a single chip. Now these can be installed as a BGA soldered down on a motherboard as well. And yeah, you basically get a leading edge DRAM-less NVMe SSD that can do multi-gigabyte per second transfers in this tiny low-power chip. So what's coming to thin and lights in terms of storage performance is looking up. You know, these things are going to land in a bunch of machines.
It's exciting to think about what the average notebook is going to be capable of now when you talk about capacity and performance in the storage subsystem, when you talk about these next generation CPUs that are coming to the platform. Notebooks are getting downright powerful on the PC side. Windows notebooks in general are getting downright powerful when it comes to just everyday tasks. Certainly maybe if you don't have a discrete GPU, excluding the gaming proposition a little bit, but even Gen 11 graphics is going to bring, from Intel is going to bring some interesting performance lifts. But yeah, man, I mean, that thing is so small, and where you can squeeze that into a thin and light, you're getting a whole lot of storage bandwidth, which to the average user, as we've said many times, gives you that feeling of a snappy, responsive system. When you have that kind of IO bandwidth, okay, to open up a program, maybe you're powering up Photoshop. When you have that kind of IO bandwidth, maybe you're rendering a video, what have you. That equates to a snappy, responsive system. And to have that much storage crammed into a little card like that, I mean, it's fascinating. Technology, every year we say this, Marco, we've been doing this for 20 years now. Crazy to even think that. But every year we say, holy crap, I can't believe they can do that much in so little space. Just blows my mind.
Yeah, the one thing I will say, I normally tell people buy stuff and enjoy it, right? Like I just did about the GPUs a minute ago. If you're thinking about buying a notebook, if you can wait till Christmas, some awesome notebooks this holiday season.
I would agree.
Just so much good stuff happening in terms of CPU, GPU, storage, display, wireless. Yes, wait for a notebook.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Yeah, I know the desktop system, the desktop ecosystem is rife with opportunity right now, but you're right. Notebooks, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think just a few more months now, like 3 months maybe or so, the back to school thing, I think a lot of college students are buying some previous gen notebooks to take to college, and I think that's, unfortunately, if they want to jump in now, August, September, to get back to school, I hate to say it, we like selling notebooks too, but if you wait until Christmas time when 10th gen comes out and all these new features, and even when hopefully Zen 2 comes to the notebook ecosystem for AMD, there's going to be some interesting stuff there as well. And cool stuff. And Rupan John again asks, he's like our straight man. He says, how many days a week are you live and streaming? That's a great question to close out the show, right? Unfortunately, not enough is the answer to that question, Rupan John. Hopefully we're not butchering your name. You'll have to just, it's going phonetic here. We're here. Usually we try to be here on Wednesdays at, 4 o'clock now, Marco?
I don't even remember because it's been like a month since we pulled it off on the right time.
The problem and we'll close it down here and sign off, folks, but the problem is we're on the jets traveling to see these manufacturers half the time, and or grinding out under embargo reviews that need to go on a deadline launch, and so it's really hard to nail down schedule, but we do try and get here on Wednesdays generally around 4 o'clock, the 4 o'clock time frame. And but we will always notify you when we're about to go live on a stream. So if you hit thumbs up and subscribe to this video. We would appreciate it. Subscribe and then hit the reminder bell. So when you see the cast, hit the reminder bell, and then it will notify you on your phone or what have you that we're about to go live and we go streaming. You can find us on twitter.com/hothardware, youtube.com/hothardware, or hothardwarevids, facebook.com/hothardware. All of these platforms, we will send out a notice when we're about to go streaming earlier in the day, sometimes even the day before. That'd be crazy, kind of heads up, right? And and we're going to be doing some giveaways soon. We haven't done that in a while, but we give away some really nice performance gaming systems, notebooks before, tablets. We've done phones. Funny you mentioned that.
We were podcasting, I just got an email from a boutique builder saying, hey, why don't we give away a system? So as soon as we finished the podcast, yes, literally while we were talking, the email just came in. So podcast, and maybe for the next one, we can announce an awesome giveaway.
Oh, so like a gaming system giveaway, a boutique gaming system builder?
Perhaps it's a builder that's been around for decades with a bird in the name.
Opposite
of the Northeast.
I think I follow your drift there, buddy. Well, that would be great if we could give away something from those guys. Yeah. All right, so there you go. More incentive to tune in and stick around. Hit thumbs up, subscribe, and thank you everybody for stopping by.